The first person to be sharing the pieces of music which send a shiver up his spine is actor, composer, pianist and free-range chicken hunter Dudley Moore. Start, is it? Domine Jesu from the Mozart Requiem, of course, with Riccardo Muti and the Berlin Philharmonic. Why did you choose that?
Well,
it's too obvious. Really.
Technically, I mean, it's because there's a wonderful supertonic clash that he does, and I can't really explain it. I mean, that is technically why I love it. I mean, it's extraordinary. I find that modulation is there's a modulation there that I love.
But it's also, isn't it, the huge chorus, I mean,
yeah,
and the rhythm.
Yeah, it's the chorus and the rhythm and the expansiveness. I mean, that's a feature of all of these choices, is the expansive quality and the fact that there's a slow sort of inexorable growth, really, if you'll pardon the expression, to these things. And it's all to do with sex and death, I'm afraid.
The only tingles you get are sex and death.
Sex and
these
death,
days.
Yes, that's the only tingles I get. There used to be about another 14, but they've all gone.
They've all
now.
Dropped off. Well, I know there's a wonderful quote. Somebody said that, because we all know that you're a rather fine pianist, but you say that playing the piano is as good as sex, but it lasts longer.
Oh, well, actually, that was said to me by Ray Brown, with whom I've played, who used to be the bass player of the Oscar Peterson Trio. And
well, actually, your next tingle could have been with Ray Brown, but I don't think he's playing with Ellington, is he, on this wonderful record, which you just introduced me to. Diminuendo e Crescendo in Blues. Tell me how you came across that.
Well, I just heard it by accident, and I just love the Paul Gonsalves bit, which is where the tenor sax plays solo with a backing trio, Ellington and bass and drums.
And this comes from the Newport Jazz Festival in 1956.
Right, yeah, and I love it because the crowd gradually gets the idea and they go mad. Oh God, it's wonderful.
Introducing you to that, because I'm going to buy that.
I love it because it's really the sort of it's the feeling that one goes after a lot in you know, playing oneself. And
well, when you started playing jazz, who were the main influences?
Oh, Errol Garner and Oscar Peterson, without a doubt. I mean, they were just extraordinary, I found.
a little bit of autobiography.
Yes.
I want to know about Dagenham, your mum, typist, but liked the piano and the music. How the music came to you in that sort, of background?
When I was born, a piano came into the house, before I was born, actually. I've still got the original receipt.
You've still got the piano, too?
I've still got the piano, yes. The piano was actually sent over to Los Angeles by my wife, Brogan, and she got it over there. Because I was complaining that I would never see this piano again, because it went when my mother died. My mother came from a family of 9 kids. You know, it was before the days of radio and television, really, and they all amused themselves, I suppose, as many families did, with their own music making and stuff. And I suppose, you know, I got a leg up to music making from that influence.
You picked it up yourself. You had just a naturally good ear, and you
I can do this. Yeah, I mean, I listened to a lot of when we did have radio, which was it seems soon after I was born. I listened to a lot of prom concerts, you know, so there was Eileen Joyce playing the Grieg piano concerto, there was Clifford Curzon and you know, Solomon and Malcolm Sargent, all these wonderful people, and Kathleen Ferrier, whom we shall come to, and a lot of people who influenced me during those teenage years. You know, they sort of came under my skin, they just sort of flowed into me, unfortunately.
Yes. But what about Beethoven then? Our next tingle.
Well, I remember when I went up to Oxford, which was in 1954, and I got this recording of Otto Klemperer's, which was at that time, and I listened to it on my gramophone player, which was a black box, I believe it was called. I mean, it was a very slow tempo. In fact, all of the tempi were fairly leisurely, but I just found it extraordinarily, again, affecting, and I loved this symphony very much.
We're going to listen to the Marche Funèbre.
Yes, the funeral march. All this stuff is to do with sex or death. I can't believe it. Oh. the way it surprises you, that.
Yes, it does.
Entry.
Mm.
And there's a real tension there. I'm tingling, I'm afraid. Just had a spasm. Here it comes, though. The real tingle is the French horns. I love French horns, and here they come right now. Oh boy. I remember getting this recording of Otto Klemperer and playing it, and I must have had that reaction. I didn't like the idea of that funeral march. I thought it was a very gloomy piece, and then I heard that fugal section, which was just, you know, extraordinary. I'm very influenced by those early things, and thank God I have that passion.
Do you think that where most tingles come from is from your memories of your first experiences of listening to them?
Without a doubt. Come from those teenage years when I'm listening to pretty awful recordings, I suppose, compared to the perfections of today. And I'm very carried away by certain things. All my life I will be that way, I think.
But do you think as you get older, the less you assimilate tingles, the harder it is to kind of find new tingles?
Well, without a doubt, actually, yeah. I can't think of anything that I would have heard recently that does the same for me.
When you're playing yourself, whether it's jazz or a classical concerto, which I know you're playing a lot more of these days, do you get a tingle when you're playing?
Now and again I do, but not the quality of tingle that I had in earlier years or with earlier music.
Well, now here's, I think, another one from your childhood and certainly from mine, although I don't think we were born quite when the record was made, but this is absolutely epitomised what you were talking about, childhood memory.
Yes.
And that's the voice of Ernest Lough in
right.
this particular and, of course, classic recording. Why is it, do you think, that of all the many records made of the same piece since, Parche, just about every boy treble you've ever heard of, none of them quite do it, do they?
Well, I talked to Robin Lough, his son, and it was very interesting to hear that Ernest Lough was just at the end of his soprano days. It was a very mature voice. It was a very... And I think it's an extraordinarily beautiful and understanding sort of interpretation of the words. I was saying to you while we were listening, it's so extraordinary. Thorburn Ball on the organ. I mean, it still gets me. I mean, I still can't listen to another boy soprano, unfortunately. It is so wonderful.
Whisk you over to your home in L.A. You've got this wonderful house in Marina Del Rey. Do you sit down specifically and listen to the music which you like listening to?
No, curiously enough, I've got very near my record player in time for times of emergency various lollipops that I love to listen to. But I play the piano a great deal. I come down in the morning and I play. The fact that I live there is of no consequence in a sense. It's just the fact that it's a room with a piano.
What sort of thing would you play?
Well, I always play Bach. I mean, I play, from the second book of the 48 Preludes and Fugues, I play the F minor fugue and, I play fugue in E major and, I mean, I love three part fugues because he tends to write a lot of three-part fugues in a dance-like manner, and there's a wonderful feeling of optimism that I love in people and in music. A great sort of, again, a naivete. I mean, I share the feeling when Berlioz says Bach is God. I'm inclined to agree.
But you haven't chosen anybody playing any of those 48?
No, I haven't, as a matter of fact. No.
Why not?
Because maybe I've got a feeling about them myself. Mm-hmm. I have heard other pianists that I absolutely adore, like Richter, I mean, playing the 48, but I don't like it. I don't sort of respond the same way. I think that because I played it so much that I've got a certain hold on it.
There are very few people I can think of who can improvise as well as an actor as they can with music.
Mm. Well, I used to improvise a lot.
Mm.
I mean, most of my days have been
improvising,
but not so much now.
Well, which leads us really into our next tingle, which is the piece which really, from what I can gather, told you that you could improvise at the piano, which is Errol Garner.
Yes.
Playing inimitably The Way You Look Tonight.
Yes, that was I heard it when I was about 16. Leonard Martin came in with, Leonard Martin was one of the blokes. We hung out and had this sort of rather infra-dig Bloomsbury thing going up, you know, Barron Road. And we used to, you know, have sausages and mash and a bit of beer, and we used to sit around philosophizing, which was mainly talking about girls, you know. And then he came in with this recording of Errol Garner playing The Way You Look Tonight, and I thought it was the most extraordinary thing I'd heard, and I've always tried to play like him since. Actually, that's in a sense an unimportant part of it. But the fact is that his rhythm was impeccable.
It's back to Bach now.
Yes.
And another part of your undergraduate days.
Well, it was deemed a very good way of getting into Oxford or Cambridge, you know, an organ scholarship. And I thought, oh, all right. You can basically waste away 3 or 4 years of your life, you know, going here. But I was playing the organ already. At church, I was playing at my local sort of...
You're doing yourself down. You've got to be good to get an organ scholarship.
Well, you see, I did do an organ scholarship, first of all, to King's College, Cambridge. I was so nervous, I couldn't move. I couldn't play anything. They said, well, now, you know, improvise on this. I couldn't improvise on this. But then I went to Oxford, and I did an organ scholarship that was Magdalen and Balliol. There were two organ scholarships, you put down whatever one you wanted first. And I was so convinced I wouldn't get it, that I couldn't have cared less. I just, you know, I played and improvised and whatnot. I knew I wasn't going to get it, and then I got it. Oh, bit of a strange moment that was. But I relished it, of course.
But being funny at the same time as playing ponderous Bach.
Well, I remember playing some jazz and in Magdalen College Chapel with the doors closed. And
I expect you did.
Yes, I'm afraid I didn't. And playing postludes on popular songs, you know, making them sound very grand.
But this is the one you've chosen. This is by Mr. Bach, and it's one of the lesser known for me, anyway, a fugue in B minor.
I love, again, its expansive quality of the theme. A feature of all of these works. I'd get on another plane. There's something about the organ, the sustaining qualities of the organ that I like. And I would prefer to hear that, you know, almost at a distance. You know, rather like my old recordings, you know.
Well, talking of your own recordings, now we're going to hear, well, not one of your scratchy ones, but a more modern one of your, indeed, of one of your own compositions. You must have written about half a dozen film scores.
Right.
And one of them was the theme all that is called Lillian Lust.
It's from the music that I wrote for a film called Bedazzled, and it's
But you called it Lillian Lust?
Yes.
Tell me why.
Well, because it was a scene involving me and Raquel Welch where she came in and served me breakfast.
All is clear.
All is clear. And this was Lillian Lust. She was one of the seven deadly sins and one of the temptations that was put in front of me, and I wrote this piece of music when she, you know, she arrived, which I think is very appropriate.
Bongos.
Well, actually, what you're hearing is a cowbell being plonked on the first and third beats, and there's a guitar there, which is a slight miscalculation on my part. But anyway, merely because it sort of, I wasn't sure where he was playing, where I could sort of pop in. But
that's one of the tunes that in your recent concert tour you decided to include in the program.
Yeah.
I like the idea that you're going in the tour. You played Gershwin, you played Mozart, you played Dudley Moore. You know, you weren't afraid to mix it up.
No.
How did the audience take it?
Well, they seem to like it, fools. thank God they did seem to like it.
Mm.
You know, I mean, I was conducting stuff that was, and playing stuff that I'd written years ago that was, for me, very moving, and then I was just basically doing what I could.
Well, the last tingle you're going to give us, Dudley, is, I must say, goose bumps, pimples, whatever it is, for me as well. And it's one of those voices, one of those artists which have that sort of effect on a lot of people, Kathleen Ferrier.
Yeah. Well, I love Kathleen Ferrier. And again, she was somebody I heard when I was very young. And this recording is something I was looking for a long time, as a matter of fact. And I finally found it. It was a very obvious choice in many ways. I just find her voice, talks of extraordinary love and sweetness, and it's an unobligated sort of love that she was giving to everybody, that in a sense I suppose I've been looking for all my life. I still haven't found it. I think I found it a few times in my youth. I must have done, because I wouldn't have retained this sweet memory of her. And I'm afraid no voice does it for me like hers.
Before we hit, though, I would like to thank you very much for sparing the time to come in and give me so many other thrills.
Well, I mean, it's really, I mean, I couldn't have wanted to do anything more, actually, because it's a bit of a treat. I mean, I feel damp with tingles and stuff. That's the word. But I mean, there's a very good reason why I couldn't listen to this stuff all day, because it would drive me nuts. I would just be a small wax ball in the corner of the studio, I think, because it's so lovely.
was Kathleen Ferrier singing Have Mercy, Lord, on Me from Johann Sebastian Bach's St. Matthew's Passion, conducted by Sir Malcolm Sargent. It was Dudley Moore's final choice when he was speaking to Jeremy Nicholas in 1992. Dudley Moore died in 2002.